For millions of Americans, I-95 is just a crowded road they have to navigate. But the Interstate Highway is also part of the global transportation system. It's a pipeline for goods entering the United States through the port of Savannah. Once at the port, many of the goods are hauled by truck up I-95 towards New York or down into Florida. As our series on I-95 continues, we look at Georgia's portion of the road. Just a small part runs through the state, but as NPR's Kathy Lohr reports, the economic impact is enormous.
The port of Savannah sits about 5 miles east of I-95. Some call it the quiet giant.
I guess we're here.
We head up more than 200 feet in an elevator on one of four giant cranes to get a broader view of the operation. Every day, 25,000 tons of cargo is funneled through the port.
This is the largest single container facility of its kind in all of North America, the second busiest on the East Coast next to New York, New Jersey, and the fourth busiest in the nation.
Robert Morris works for the Georgia Ports Authority. He says 7,000 to 9,000 trucks move onto and off of this facility every day. They're loaded with goods heading for retail stores across the Southeast, the Midwest, and along the Gulf Coast.
This is a major hub for, of all things, imported beer, and many of your Christmas goods are beginning to come in.
While some ports along the East Coast have struggled, the port of Savannah continues to attract more freight. Last year, it handled 2.6 million containers. About 80% of that freight ends up here on I-95. You're hearing the constant rumble of truck traffic along I-95 near Savannah, where another important interstate also intersects, I-16. This is a major transportation logistics point along the East Coast.
It's critical. It's what makes one of our assets like the port as competitive and fast-growing as they've been for the past 8 or 10 years.
Paige Siplon is head of Georgia's Center of Innovation for Logistics. He says Georgia's ports at Savannah and Brunswick provide nearly 300,000 jobs in the state.
Having that infrastructure and having that connectivity connects us into other parts of the world that have huge population centers like New York and California. It's about the most efficient and, most importantly, the most reliable route to get your cargo you want it where you want it to be.
Some of the largest companies have set up distribution centers at this junction on I-95, including Home Depot, IKEA, and Walmart. But smaller companies have also built their business around this corridor. Billy Robinson is the CEO of Port City Logistics.
You know, we're a public warehouse, so unlike a Home Depot or a Target, we deal with anybody's stuff. So what you're seeing is a wide variety.
Robinson says his company has three warehouses, nearly 1 million square feet of space to store merchandise. On a tour, we see paper products, boxes of flavoring to be added to Starbucks coffee, and Heineken beer, which has just come in from the port. All of this is unloaded, repackaged, and shipped out as needed to the southeastern states, and most of it travels at least part of the way on I-95.
Yeah, 95's key. It's a huge key.
I mean, you guys are really dependent on these major interstates.
Yeah, our customers wouldn't come here without them. Our business wouldn't work without them.
One of the vital selling points for Robinson's business is the proximity to the road. And in the next few months, Georgia will be the first state in the Southeast to finish its expansion of I-95. It will accommodate 3 lanes of traffic in each direction from South Carolina to Florida. Todd Long with the Georgia Department of Transportation says the state has spent over $1 billion in the last 15 years to widen I-95.
That's a lot of money. And, you know, even today in 2010, that's almost worth an entire capital program for the entire state invested in one corridor. I would rate it up there as one of the most important interstates we have in the whole country.
Georgia made I-95 a priority in part because of the high volume of freight traffic, but also because so many tourists use the interstate. And it's a vital evacuation route that funnels people out of Florida in case of a hurricane. Kathy Lohr, NPR News.
NPR's series I-95, The Road Most Traveled, continues on the next weekend edition Saturday with a report on how the road shaped development in Florida. And if you're driving on I-95, we've got some stops you shouldn't miss. Head to our site, npr.org/I-95.
Say I-95, and millions of Americans immediately get an image, if only red tail lights, winking into your family's car in a crowded commute home. For many, I-95 calls up happy recollections of the road you hit for a long haul to the beach and back. All along the eastern seaboard, Interstate 95 has helped shape the daily lives and vacation dreams of the roughly 100 million people who reside alongside it. They live in dense cities and rural counties in the 15 states through which I-95 passes on its north-south path. The traffic peaks in August, so beginning today, continuing for the next two weekends, NPR will take a closer look at this great river of traffic in a series we're calling I-95, The Road Most Traveled. NPR Senior Business Editor Marilyn Geewax is here to tell us more. Marilyn, thanks for being with us.
Hi, Scott.
I-95 has been around a long time, so why a series?
Scott, I happened to see this article that was saying, after all these years and years of delay, construction's finally going to start in September on this part that's called the missing link of I-95. It's a short stretch where I-95 was never completed around Trenton, New Jersey. And in theory, I-95 should be this unbroken highway that goes from Maine all the way down to Miami. But it's not. It's got this gap. So we're going to talk about that missing link in a piece that's coming up in just a few moments.
And what makes I-95 distinctive compared with other interstates around the country?
Well, it's really a key transportation link for the whole East Coast, and this is the most densely populated part of the country, and it's also sort of the most historic. The original 13 colonies are included on this road, and it passes through more states than any other interstate in the country. The Department of Transportation says it gets VMTs, that's vehicle miles traveled, more than any other road in the country each year. It's our infrastructure workhorse, and it allows us to get to our jobs, takes our exports over to ships, and maybe the most important thing is it gets our little bodies out onto the beach to get a tan this time of year.
Tell us about what you've got coming up.
Well, after today's report on that missing link, we've got Kathy Lohr coming up to a reporter in Georgia who's spent some time talking to officials there who say they have spent a fortune expanding I-95 to accommodate all that freight traffic that's now coming in through the port of Savannah. This has really transformed the economy in South Georgia because it's made that part of the world a global link where exports and imports come in and out. And then next weekend, we're going to head down to South Florida and up to Maine. Of course, Florida and Maine are two very different states, but they both depend very heavily on I-95 to deliver tourists and create jobs.
Speaking of tourists and jobs, for that matter, Labor Day weekend, we'll find plenty of tourists in I-95, but there's another type of motorist who doesn't get a break on the holiday. We're going to hear more about them, too.
Right. We're going to end this series on Labor Day weekend by learning more about the migrant workers who drive up and down I-95 all the time. They follow the crops that have to be picked along the eastern seaboard. And our very last piece, we'll talk to transportation futurists who offer some suggestions on how to keep traffic flowing on what is already a very overcrowded road. You know, we use our interstates for all kinds of short jaunts. You know, you might get on I-95 just to run up to the mall or to get you to your office, whatever. But these things were really intended to be interstates. You're supposed to be able to drive quickly from one state to another, not just run to the mall. But if we want to preserve that interstate system, we're going to have to get a lot more creative about how we increase the capacity.
NPR Senior Business Editor Marilyn Geewax, thanks so much.
Oh, you're welcome, Scott.
It's NFL preseason time. Pro players are running, snorting, and knocking heads in training. The season starts September 9. Joe Gibbs, the former head coach of the Washington Redskins, wants to give the players another kind of training, financial literacy. This summer, he partnered with Strayer University to offer the team a primer on financial basics, from credit cards to maintaining a household budget. Coach Joe Gibbs joins us now from the offices of Joe Gibbs Racing in Huntersville, North Carolina. Coach, thanks so much for being with us.
Hey, well, I'm excited about having a chance to join you.
And are football players, in your mind, especially vulnerable to financial problems?
I think any young person that has a chance to get a substantial amount of money would probably be in very much the same situation. Mm-hmm. I think it could happen to anybody. I use my life as a good example. 1981 through 84, I went through a real financial mess for me and my family. And the bottom line is it took me 4.5 years of our financial life to come back out of that. So it can happen to any young person, I think. And the younger people in our society, particularly athletes, that get large sums of money, it's just a little bit of a natural trap. And you get the money. People say suggest you could get in this deal, that deal. You trust someone. And I had a lot of young people come through my office when I was coaching with the Redskins. And when we got down to the problems they were having, at some point in there, I'd say, are you in financial trouble? And they would say, yes, I am. And, of course, that then impacts how they can play football because they're worried about all kinds of issues and things, and particularly their financial future.
Yeah, Sports Illustrated says 78% of all NFL players go bankrupt or in financial stress just 2 years after they retire.
Right, and so that was my motivation. I saw a lot of great young men obviously play for me. You know, one thing about football, you go through a lot of ups and downs, and you see a lot of them kind of lay it on the line for the team. You admire them, and you're wanting that the fact that they're getting a chance to play football, they're going to get a great financial reward for that, and you would hope that that would set them up for life. Mm-hmm. And yet, in many cases, the opposite is true. But then I started thinking about it. I said, gosh, wouldn't it be great to put together a program, a simple program that fit into the player's schedule, that would kind of give them from A to Z, these are the things to look out for in your financial life.
Yeah. Now, the story of Mark Brunell, former Redskin quarterback, and a few other teams, is often taken as exemplary. He signed contracts for $52 million in his career, and yet he filed for bankruptcy.
Well, Mark played for us, and that's a perfect example. Here's someone that's one of the neatest guys you'd ever want to be around, a great team guy, high-quality guy, great family guy. Okay, now here's someone, just like you mentioned, that had the benefit of a lot of money, but all it takes is one mistake, mm-hmm. being in the signing up for the wrong open-ended venture of some kind, and you could wind up in a mess like that. And I think Mark Brunell, if you knew him, you would say first-class person. When that came out and went public, I think it highlighted the problems that are out there in this area. And, it did highlight kind of what we're talking about. We presented this to the players at no cost to the players. It was strictly a gift. It's nothing where you're recommending investments or somebody to go to talk about investments. It was strictly the help to have someone self-help themselves in finances and to try and make good decisions and realize where the traps are out there.
Coach, you realize that a lot of people, football fans, are just not going to have any sympathy for players who they often consider to be spoiled, overpaid kids in any case.
Well, I think that may be the case. I will say this to everybody out there. I coached, two different times for 15 years as a head coach and really was in coaching for 40 years. That is not what I saw out of young people that played for me. I did not see on our football teams, I saw a lot of high-quality young people. I saw them totally dedicated, wanting to be the best football player they could be. Now, do you have some examples of people that go through there or they're highlighted where they're, they're selfish and looking out for themselves and they may say or do ridiculous things? Yes. But a lot of these guys would sacrifice for the team. So I did not see that. I saw a lot of young people that when you get up real close to them and get a chance to know them and see them going through the good times in football and the bad times in football, you really learn to respect them, and I did as a coach.
Yeah. These seminars are going to go beyond the circle of Redskins?
I hope it is. We're going to have a meeting coming up here with D. Smith and the Players Union, and we're going to talk about things. We just want to in any way try and help and promote this program and to see if there would be an interest and getting it to other teams and other players going forward in the future.
Coach, you're always welcome here. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Joe Gibbs, author of the book Game Plan for Life, speaking to us from the offices of his racing company, Joe Gibbs Racing in Huntersville, North Carolina. Thanks so much, Coach.
Thanks, Scott.
Welcome to All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Audie Cornish in for Guy Raz. Buy or rent? In normal times, that decision might have been easy for potential homeowners, but these are not normal times. We'll start today with a look at the embattled mortgage giants Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and how their fate could change the American dream. But first, the story of a couple that is questioning whether homeownership is the only path to that dream. Meet the Cleavers. No, not June and Ward, but Mark and Joanne Cleaver, who recently moved to Chicago.
We kind of looked at each other and said, you know, it's time to sell and maybe downsize. And then started looking in the market and went, we don't like what we see happening, and we'd like the freedom of rent. The trade-off just seemed to be better and better the more we looked at the rent option versus the buy option again.
You know, I think the rap on renting is that you're transitory. But I got to tell you, for us, it's an extremely appealing idea. I wouldn't call it being rootless. I'd call it being free.
Well, in the concept of transitory, I mean, the building we went into, I think it's about 20 years old. And there's people there that have been there since the day they opened. And they're very happy. Now, some of them are dying, unfortunately. But at the end of the day, they're all happy. And I'm looking at that going, you know, if we stay here till we die, it's okay by me. I love where I'm at right now.
We don't know how long we'll be here. And we would lose money if we bought now, even at today's mortgage rates. We would lose money if we moved within the next 5 to 8 years. We've penciled it out. That's the deal. And frankly, condo prices would have to go down a good 30% more to overcome the negative effect of the transition in transaction cost.
We lost money on our last house transaction. We had more money in equity going up to Milwaukee than when we came back, like I think most people. So from that perspective, have I gained a lot of money? No. I've been better off to have been renting over that period and putting the net difference between what a home would cost and what I'm paying for rent into the bank. I write my rental check and I think this is worth every penny, because I'll tell you what it does is it locks my cost in every month. I have no surprises. Utilities are included. Parking's included. I write my check. I'm done for the month. It's a wonderful feeling.
Although I will say, we'll continue to go to open houses and take a good look and see if there's something there that really absolutely hits on all those cylinders. But you know what? Those guys who look at Playboy, they're looking at something they can never have. And that's where real estate is for a lot of people these days. A lot of pretty pictures that's out of reach for most of us. It represents a glossy, airbrushed ideal that probably was never the reality to begin with.